T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by the Blue Monkey.
Six Gary Parish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN, and every day right around this time I'm joined by your award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian host, Jeff Calkins Show. Jeff Calkins. Jeff Calkins, how are you?
I'm good, Gary.
Jeff Calkins, are you old enough to remember when Arkansas basketball was one of the very best basketball programs in America?
40 minutes of hell, baby. 40 minutes of hell.
So they had that stretch in the 90s where they, in a seven-year stretch under Nolan Richardson, they went to 6 Sweet 16s. 3 Final Fours, won a national championship. Mm. And would you believe they haven't been to a Sweet 16 since 1996? Like, that's incredible.
You know what? You fire a guy and you assume everything's going to get better.
It is something that, and I was talking with on a radio station in Kansas City earlier today, you always assume that your next coach is going to be better than your previous coach. Everybody does.
Unless they're going to accomplish exactly as much. The starting point will be, unless it's Coach K or
right.
someone who
and,
retires, right?
That's exactly
if
example.
You fire someone, the starting point will be, the lowest point that can be reached is with the zenith of what they reached, right? And then, and it can only go up from there. It's like I've used this example the other night. It's like Ole Miss and David Cutcliffe. You fire David Cutcliffe because he's not winning big enough, and the next person is going to do at least as well as David Cutcliffe, except for Ed Orgeron.
Right.
Yeah.
It is, But to be one of the top programs in America and then go 23 straight years, like basically go from that to a stretch of 23 years where you don't make the Sweet 16 is like impossible to imagine. Like if I went back to 19, so they win the national championship in 1994. Mm-hmm. And if I told Arkansas fans, okay, listen, in a couple of years, you're going to go to a Sweet 16, all right? And then never again, all the way through 2019, they'd be like, what? What are you talking about? You can't even imagine that.
Totally inconceivable. One of the great programs in America. Of course, why was it one of the great programs in America? I mean, you could argue, okay, this is exactly why it was so important to hire Penny, because Memphis was in danger of slipping into irrelevance. Except Memphis will always have the local basketball talent, right, that will make it relevant. Why is Arkansas, why was it ever great?
Well, I think Nolan was great. I think
I know that, yes. But, I mean, what natural advantages does it have?
They were one
they
of...
They care.
They cared. That was yep. That's an advantage you had then that you can't really have now, mm-hmm. because you invested then and your fans right. invested then. Now everybody invests because right. everybody's got so much money. It's just like, yeah.
A little bit like Tennessee women's basketball, honestly.
Yeah,
it's a little bit like what's happened with Tennessee women's basketball. Once upon a time, they were one of the few that cared particularly, and now everybody cares, and it's harder to dominate a Tennessee.
Yep, I mean, that's exactly right. I think this is true among certain women's sports as well. I had a conversation with somebody once about this. Like, if you want your daughter, you have a daughter, and you want her to get an athletic scholarship, to go to college, they were like, start teaching her golf. Like, start teaching her, because there's not a whole lot of young girls playing golf. Like, you're only competing against so many other people, as opposed to, like, all young girls play soccer. So, like, good luck with that.
Right.
But, like, yeah, like, get them into golf. Get them into, I can't.
No, remember. What you got to get them into, we've learned it. There's anything we learned 2 weeks ago. You got to get them into crew, right?
Or
whatever. You know, you got to. And then you just got to, and then apply to USC, and it's pretty much golden.
All right. And so, I don't know. Oh, yeah, I couldn't remember how we got on this topic.
Yeah.
It's because, yeah, I think Arkansas cared in a way that most – were they in the SEC then, or was that still, like, another league? But, like, they cared in a way other Southern colleges didn't care outside of maybe Kentucky. But now fast forward to today, and, like, everybody in the SEC, everybody in the Big 12, they all invest in men's basketball just because they have so much money they have to throw it somewhere.
Why is the subject of today, when we could perfectly well be talking about Johnny Manziel, why is the subject Arkansas?
Mike Anderson got fired today.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
It happened.
I've been talking a penny. I'm trying to write a column about Penny.
It happened a little.
I didn't see that move across the transom.
Breaking news.
A little after 3 o'clock, Arkansas fired Mike Anderson. So there's now 4 SEC jobs open, and LSU will be the 5th at some point. And it's interesting, like, you go through that league and you look at these basketball coaches, every one of these schools has gone out and made big hires. You know, Kentucky's got John Calipari, Tennessee's got Rick Barnes, Auburn's got Bruce Pearl, South Carolina's got Frank Martin, Mississippi State's got Ben Howland. I mean, just so down the line. And basically everybody has got the coach they believe is the right guy for their job, with the exception of maybe Missouri. And everybody else just fired their coaches and said, we're going to go get our guy. And they got so much money in that league now. I really do think they're the type of league that can throw $4 million at a basketball coach per year and just make them – they can outspend people in the SEC, and I think that's the plan at places like Arkansas and Alabama. They're going to go – and maybe even Vanderbilt. They're going to go try to outspend people.
What did you think of the Vandy situation, by the way? That seemed crazy to me.
I would not have fired him. And the reason I would not have fired him is not because – I think everybody deserves time. It's the dumbest thing in the world. You know, everybody, like, I even saw Jeff Goodman the other day, you know, who, like, obviously knows this profession and understands the sport. He was like, every coach deserves 4 years. No, they don't. Like, that's just dumb. Every coach doesn't deserve 4 years. You can tell very quickly sometimes that you just don't have the right guy. It was the case with Tubby Smith. Can you imagine somebody subscribing to the every coach deserves 4 years thing with Tubby Smith? I mean, you'd have ran the program straight.
I can imagine, you know, what's his name up there in Indianapolis subscribing to that.
Dawkins
subscribing to that. Maybe Saul Smith would say that.
Saul.
It's a short list, though.
Yeah, it's like the idea that you need, you know, so when I defend Bryce Drew, it ain't because I think he deserved more time. If you have decided he's not the right guy for the job and there's evidence to support that, you're smart to pull the trigger when you did. Where I would defend Bryce is he was considered a rising star in the coaching profession just a few years ago. This guy passed on Mississippi State, turned down Georgia Tech, and finally accepts the Vanderbilt job because I think he liked the idea of raising his family in Nashville. Like, that's another big thing with the Vanderbilt job, is you get to coach in the SEC but live in a really nice city. You know, it's different from living in Starkville or, you know, Fayetteville or whatever. So he's a rising star in the profession. You hire him. He goes to the NCAA tournament in year one and then signs a recruiting class with 2 5-star kids. And so he's the mid-major coach who showed very quickly he can recruit at the high major level. You don't have to guess anymore or wonder anymore. He's already shown he can do it. And then, of course, he comes into this season with high expectations, but it's not like they were a preseason top 25 team or anything. And then his best player and his point guard go down. Season-ending injury, five games into the season. And then, yeah, it spiraled on him. And Darius Garland should not be the difference between you being good and you being 0-18 in the SEC. But if you'll concede that Vanderbilt would have been at least okay with Darius Garland healthy, and then if you'll concede you wouldn't have fired Bryce Drew if Vanderbilt was respectable, then what you're telling me is you're firing Bryce Drew because his point guard got hurt. And that's crazy to me. But so I would not have done that. But if you are an athletic director who saw up close, you know what, this guy lost a key player, I get it, but then he lost his whole team. And we got embarrassed one night after another, and I just don't think this guy is the future of our program, then I got no problem with you pulling the trigger. You know, there's clauses in the contract that allow for you to do that. You can do that. It's costly, but you can do it. But you better be right. And I'm not sure that your next hire is going to be better than Bryce Drew, especially if they go out and hire John Thompson III. Like, if you asked most athletic directors 6 months ago, who would you rather have as your basketball coach going forward, Bryce Drew or John Thompson III, almost all of them would have said Bryce Drew. And now you're going to be the school that fired Bryce Drew to hire John Thompson III? A little crazy. If you fired Bryce Drew and went out and hired Shaka Smart, then maybe okay. But firing Bryce Drew to hire John Thompson III doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Just to me, it is. Bryce Drew has proven that he can recruit at the highest level to Vanderbilt,
right?
And to me, that's the main qualification of a basketball coach. That's it. And so given that he has proven he can do that thing that not every coach can do, certainly to Vanderbilt, that's a guy I give extra time to. But again, as you point out, I'm not watching up close, and I do believe that if you see that this guy just doesn't have it, just for whatever reason, if you firmly believe that, yes, there's no reason to wait. I just think you just wonder if it's like new AD, want my guy, you know, my guy, and particularly if my guy is John Thompson III, you're like, really? Does this really make sense? When you just fired a guy who can recruit at a very high level at Vanderbilt.
Right. I mean, once you show me that you can win championships at the mid-major level by coaching, and then you show me you can recruit at the high major level, like, those are two things I don't have to guess on anymore. That's a pretty good place to start. But whatever. He did go 0-18 in the SEC.
Right.
And he'll get a whole bunch of millions.
And he'll get a good job, won't he? Won't he get a good job now?
I think he will be employed again soon. Just like Tim Miles, who got fired today at Nebraska. It won't take him long to get another good job. Because
didn't this, by the way, open up a spot for Mike Miller? I know Penny said today, one of the things he said was Mike has said no school has actually contacted him. And the UNLV thing has been what people have been talking about. Doesn't seem real. But there's a lot of openings, and these create more openings. And the proverbial domino effect. Is there going to be a spot for Mike Miller somewhere?
Perhaps, but Mike's in an interesting spot because I don't know that a Power 5 job is going to open up for Mike Miller. And it's a pretty big leap to go from one-year college assistant to head coach of a Power 5 job. There's got to be special circumstances there to make that happen usually, like it's your alma mater. Like Fred Hoiberg at Iowa State got a job with no coaching experience. Chris Mullen at St. John's. Pat Ewing at Georgetown, although Pat was an NBA assistant for a long time. It's usually got to be some special circumstances like that, because those schools know that they got the money and the resources to go out and hire more established people. And they tend to be risk-averse. So I would be surprised if, like, he's on the radar at Alabama or Arkansas or A&M or any of those SEC jobs. UNLV is obviously interesting because he has real support there. I mean, they're writing columns about him in Las Vegas. Bryce Harper's tweeting about him. He's at least undeniably on their radar. How about this? I get off the air at 6 o'clock. I'm immediately at 6:05 going on radio in UNLV. You know what they want to talk to me about? Mike Miller.
Let me guess, Mike Miller.
Right. So if a radio host in Las Vegas is having me on to talk about Mike Miller, they at least believe that he's a real option there. And if I'm Mike, I would kill for that job. That is another place where you've got a big brand, real history, and people will support it when it's going well. That'd be an awesome first job for Mike. But then, like, the type of job that you really might get for your first-time job is not the type of job I'm certain Mike would want. You know, it's the guy who's got $100 million or whatever, and he's used to traveling and in a certain way and living in a certain way, and suddenly you go to, like, I don't know, the Troy job opened. You know, like, you go to Troy, like, you're living there, your bus rides, commercial flights, it's just not the way you've been living. And so I don't know that if I'm – obviously, Mike could do whatever he wants, but I don't know if I were Mike, I would want to go down to the low level to try to climb to the top level, because I've made so much money playing that I'm not fighting for my life, you know? So if I'm Mike, I might only want jobs at the UNLV level and up, and those jobs are hard to get. So we'll see, but I don't
Penny,
know.
Penny, by the way, he gave himself a grade today, mm-hmm. Grading. I don't think I've ever done much grading in the paper. That's not something I do. But I actually, in the column I'm writing, I gave him some grades in different categories, okay? And so he gave himself a B. That's absurd, don't you think? because it's ridiculous.
I mean, I would give him an A.
Yeah, you give me. Okay, so, but what I did, I broke it down into different categories. I said recruiting, excitement, PR and media, which I did different than excitement, and recruiting, excitement, PR, media. What would be on the court coaching was another one, and forgot what the other one was. Okay, there was another one. I gave him an A+ in everything, except for coaching, which I gave him an A-.
Yeah, like I think the other ones are A+ just for obvious reasons. Recruiting, he's got a top 10 recruiting class right now that's probably going to be improved upon. That's an A. I think he's the first.
I think it's an A+.
It's an A+.
Tyler, yeah, he's an A+, right?
He,
I give out pluses.
He became the first college coach in history to get a commitment from the number one player in America in the same calendar year in which he was hired for his first Division I job. That's insane. And,
right.
and I know it's special circumstances that are well documented. But still, it had never been done before. And so,
Staff was the other one. Staff was the other one. So I gave him A+ for you got to give him A+ recruiting, A+ excitement, clearly, right?
Sure.
A+. Would you give him an A+ on PR and media, or do you downgrade him for the barn stuff?
I think in the market, probably gets an A+. Outside of the market, people would downgrade him, but.
So you can give him an A there.
Yeah,
I mean, listen,
I was never bothered by anything that he said. Even if I didn't agree with everything that he said, I just appreciated that he was willing to talk like a human being as opposed to a coach.
Right.
And so
right.
I got.
He even did that again today. Yeah. Staff. How about staff? What do you give him on the staff?
An A, I guess. I mean, everybody seems to be really complimentary of the staff. They maximize. Maybe they didn't maximize. I don't know. But the team got better as the season went on, and they overachieved relative to preseason expectations, at least as it relates to KenPom. They started the season 107, finished the season 58. They improved by nearly 50 spots there. I guess it's 40.
Yeah, okay. That brings us to the final coach. Here would be I gave him an A-, and I can see some people arguing for a B or a B+, right, or whatever. Here would you hold them against him with coaching. You'd say it took him a long time. It took him too long to figure out that Alo and Tyler weren't with Jeremiah wasn't the way to go. The way to go here was to give the ball to Jeremiah and say, you go do this. And if they'd done that earlier, they might have won some. That'd be the only criticism I could see, really, that you might, if you're quibbling, right? Do you buy that?
I think that's true.
Right. I think that's true. Now, I give him credit for then realizing it, because a lot of people thought he wouldn't have benched Alo and wouldn't have benched Tyler Harris, right? And that there would have been fallout if there would have. I think he's proven one thing, that he's totally willing to, like, make the hard decision to do not what he thinks is required to win won't necessarily in every circumstance be what I think or you think, whatever else. But he's not letting, like, this other stuff get in the way. Like, he said, Jeremiah's the way to go. I'm going to go that way. Like, I give him full points for that. I think had they done that originally, they might have won a couple more games. I do believe that. And that's why I give them the minus.
Yeah, but, he wouldn't be the first coach to have to figure out his team, like, on the fly.
Right.
John Calipari famously started his last season at Memphis playing Tyreek Evans off the ball. And it became clear after about 4 or 5 games, you got to put the ball in his hands and just let him go. And then that team goes on to be a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. I think learning how to play, learning who to play
right.
and what role. I would put that in the positive column because he did recognize this isn't working. What do we do now? And the thing that he did made the team better,
right.
and it made Jeremiah better.
Well, that's the other thing, that the team got better over the course of the year, which is another thing you say in terms of coaching. Like, that's what good coaching looks like, right? A team that gets better over the course of the year. That's to me what good coaching looks like.
Like, listen, I don't know if you. I'll just say this. As long as I'm being honest, this is the truth. I wondered if when the games actually started, he might look overwhelmed by a Greg Marshall or a Mick Cronin or a Fran Dunphy or a Kelvin Sampson or a Rick Barnes or a Chris Beard or some of the other undeniably accomplished and good coaches around this country in his league. I wasn't sure that would be the case, but I accepted it as a possibility. I said 100 times, with all due respect to all the great high school coaches in this market, it's very different coaching against Kelvin Sampson and Greg Marshall than it is coaching against whomever. And I say all that to say this. There was not a, I really don't think a single time this year, and I watched basically every Memphis game. I don't think there was a single time this year where I went, uh-oh, he doesn't look the part. Uh-oh, he's in over his head. I never felt one time that he didn't look like he belonged. And to me, that's an incredible compliment for a first-year college head coach.
Yeah, but I agree with all of that, absolutely every single word of that. And, I mean, he goes into Wichita and he beats Greg Marshall. Like, that was not a great team. Like, you know, I mean, like, he clearly was never overwhelmed. There were times, like at South Florida, they fall as far behind as they do in the first whatever. I guess you can quibble about that, too. Like, they didn't figure out how to win on the road. They had this whole sort of fall behind thing for a while there that we talked about. But I think you're exactly right. He never looked overwhelmed. He clearly is up to this. There's no question about that. I don't think they could see an A+, though. I think that gets you a B+ or an A-. I think he did a good coaching job, which is a B+ or an A-. But anyway, it was an interesting game. Himself a B. And then the other interesting thing he said was, and it just goes to talking like a human being. We were asking about expectations next year, or sort of just resisting this coach stuff, this coach talk. And like most coaches right now, if you're Penny, you'd start saying this. You'd start saying, going to be like really young next year. You know, we're losing 5 starters. We're going to be really young. These are going to be talented, but it's going to take some time to build this team. And you would be tamping down, right? You say that. Look at UCLA this year. You can have a top 10 recruiting class, not make the tournament. Look at Texas this year. You know, obviously we hope to be good, and we're always going to have that's always going to be our goal, but we know it's going to be a process. It's not what Penny said at all. He said, oh yeah, absolutely. My expectations are going to be higher than anybody's. Duke and Kentucky have proven that just because you're freshman, you can't make an impact. He doesn't have Zion Williamson on the team next year, right? Right. He's comparing himself to Duke. He said Duke and Kentucky have proven you'd be freshman, and I embrace the expectations, and I like high expectations. Like he just doesn't do the reflexively self-protective things that coaches say, and I find it absolutely wonderful. Like even if his recruiting class is not Duke or Kentucky, like that's what he says. He says, yes, of course I embrace those high expectations.
Yeah, I would, and most coaches do, like try to lower the bar a little bit. He clearly just does it, right? And again, good for him. It's better to hear a coach right. Believing in himself. You know, the previous coach, like, tried to discount everything. You know, oh, people don't want to come to the games and people don't want to play at Memphis.
Takes a long time.
Right. And, you know, you know, recruiting takes time.
Yeah,
and
we're playing on the wrong night.
I mean, one lie after another. And perhaps they're not lies. Like, maybe he really did believe them. But if he really did believe them, he's not the right guy for the job, because you want somebody to believe in the job that they have. And Penny clearly does. But I will say, there's not much difference between the number one and, say, the number eight. You know, when you're looking at rankings of things, like, hey, we've got the 8th ranked class in America, like, we got a top 10 class. It's a massive difference between the type of class Duke enrolls year in and year out and the type of class Memphis is about to enroll. I mean, Duke right now, yes, is showing that you can win with freshmen, but my God, one of them, Zion Williamson. Another one's,
and they nearly lost to UCF. Right.
Another one's RJ Barrett, and another one's Cam Reddish. We're talking about 3 top 5 picks, 4 first round picks.
Basically, 3 James Wisemans. They got 3 James Wisemans.
I mean, I think they got.
And one's better. One's better. Like, they got better than 3 James.
I mean, I'd say two are better.
Yeah. You think 2 are better? You think RJ Barrett's better, too?
At least. I think at least 2 of them are better than James Wiseman. And so, you know, and at Kentucky right now, first off, like, that got off to a rough start, but John's got 2 first-round picks in Keldon Johnson and Ashton Hagans, a grad transfer all Pac-12 player, so a 23-year-old Reed Travis, who is already accomplished at the high major level at Stanford, and an All-American sophomore in P.J. Washington. Memphis ain't going to have any of those things. Like, the Tigers will next year have an an incredible roster relative to recent rosters, but one sure bet NBA player, that's probably it. No experience to speak of, or at least, you know, no guys that went out and were just awesome this year coming back to school. Tyler had his moments. Alex had some moments. Antoine Jones had some moments, but none of them are like up for freshman All-America stuff. I want Memphis fans to be excited because they should, because it's going to be a fun season. You got the number one player in America coming on campus, but the idea that this is just 100% going to be a top 25 team, NCAA tournament team, I'm not convinced of that. I will have them ranked in the preseason, but I promise you, other people who do the same thing I do by releasing very early rankings will not have, some people won't have them, because it is not a no-brainer to have them based on the things that you look at. Coach, players coming back, what you're about to enroll. It's not a no-brainer that they're going to be as good as most Memphis fans think. I'm optimistic, but I can also be realistic. There are teams every year that have rosters just as good as Memphis' roster is going to be next year that miss the NCAA tournament.
I agree with all of that. But I also just found it striking that Penny immediately says, "You can Qatar." Oh, that's just what he does. Like, he's just this, no, I'm not going to. I mean, he now, mind you, we were grading a little bit on a curve because people were just, things have been so bad. So, but he said the same thing this year. He said, this can be an NCAA tournament team. Right. You know, he said, that's my goal this year. And he didn't get clobbered because they didn't meet those expectations. The difference next year is when he says this is an NCAA tournament team, other people will also believe that. This year, I mean, the fan base will believe that. It should be. This year, the fan base, even though Penny said it, the fan base didn't actually believe it, so they didn't hold them to it. Next year, the fan base will believe it should be an NCAA tournament team, so they will hold them to it.
It really is the rare situation where the fans might be more realistic than the coach. It's usually the
certainly
other way around.
Last year, yeah. Certainly this past year, the fans were more realistic than the coach.
Right. Right. But we'll see. Guess what? We got plenty of time to talk about it. We'll do it again.
See ya.
I'll see you later. Bye-bye. When we come back, so everybody knows this NCAA tournament has been chalky, right? You got four number one seeds, four number two seeds, four number three seeds, two number fours, and then a five seed and a 12 seed. So the only thing that's not top four seeds still remaining in this bracket is an Auburn team that was preseason top 15, just won the SEC tournament, and an Oregon team that was preseason top 15, just won the Pac-12 tournament. One of the things I had said over the past week is that, really over the past month, certainly before the NCAA tournament started, is that I thought the top eight teams, in other words, all the ones and all the twos, had sort of spent the bulk of January and February separating themselves from the rest of the country. And it's why I thought that we could have a pretty predictable NCAA tournament, at least at the top of the bracket. Because I thought the ones and twos were just different than just about everybody else. And so far, the tournament has played out that way. But in an attempt to sort of back this up, you know, hey, this is pretty predictable. In fact, we could have predicted this a long time ago. I went back and looked at old rankings. How about rankings from last June?
Oh.
And it's pretty wild how well they held up. I'll tell you about that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. NCAA tournament gets restarted on Thursday, and it is chalky. Really just one heavy hitter after another. 16 teams left, and it's all the one seeds, all the two seeds, all the three seeds, and 2-4 seeds, a 5 and a 12. And the 5, like I said, is an Auburn team that was preseason top 15. Just won the SEC tournament. The 12's an Oregon team that was preseason top 15. Just won the Pac-12 tournament. So there is no Cinderella involved in this bracket anymore. There's nothing but good teams left. There really is no Final Four combination that would be that surprising from this point forward. We've got all the ones and all the twos in the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2009. And so this time of the year in a variety of places. I'm talking so much about the bracket. And one of the things I had said is, because one of the hosts at CBS Sports Q asked me about my bracket, because my bracket looks pretty good right now, I've got 14 of the 16 Sweet 16 teams correctly picked. The only ones I missed on, I had UC Irvine instead of Oregon, and I had Maryland instead of LSU. But I do have 14 of the 16. And so one of the hosts said, well, why did you, you know, why did you think it would be as chalky as it is? And my real answer is that I always assume that it's going to be chalky, and then it's not because of the nature of the tournament. But I always assume, for the most part, that the better teams are going to beat the inferior teams.
Mm-hmm.
The superior teams are going to beat the inferior teams. Why would you think otherwise? You take a shot on an upset here or there, but if you just largely think that the better teams are going to win the games, it seems like you should be right way more often than you're wrong. It's just not always
sometimes.
True. It's just not always true with the NCAA tournament because it's, again, a single elimination tournament of 40-minute games, and weird stuff happens. But really weird stuff hasn't happened in this bracket. But one of the points when talking about this that I made is that it felt like to me, as somebody who wakes up every day and ranks basketball teams, that some point around January, early February, that there seemed to be separation between whether it was 8 or 9 or 10 teams and everybody else, or 6, 7, 8 and everybody else, there seemed to be right around there in the 8, 9, 10 team range. Like there's a top 8 or 9, and then there was a little bit of a drop off. And I thought that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee basically got the 1 seeds and the 2 seeds right. I might have differed with them on a 2 seed,
mm-hmm.
Not had this team, but then had that team. But basically, I think they had identified with the 1s and the 2s, the best teams in the country. And the 1s are obviously Virginia, North Carolina, Duke, and Gonzaga. The 2s are Kentucky, Tennessee, Michigan, and Michigan State. And I went back just to see if my memory matched reality. And I just said, okay, I'm going to go back to February 1st. Because it's a nice, you flip the calendar.
Sure.
February 1st. And I'm going to look at the top of the top 25 and 1. And the number 1 and number 2 seeds in this NCAA tournament were all in the top 9 on February 1st. It's a pretty decent chunk of games ago. But those teams had already established themselves as the best in the country. And then they maintained that status through Selection Sunday, evidence being that they all got 1s and 2 seeds. So, again, of the teams that got 1s and 2 seeds in this bracket, I had them in the top 9. 8 teams, all in the top 9 on February 1st. And then had them basically there on Selection Sunday as well. And then I went back to the update of the top 25 and 1. Not in the preseason, like just before the season started, but last June, after the deadline to withdraw from the NBA draft passed. And so we had a pretty good indication of what schools' rosters were going to look like. And I wanted to see how well it held up. Because one of the most frustrating things you hear every time you put out preseason rankings is, preseason rankings don't mean anything. And just know if you're saying that, you're wrong. Because there's actually been studies done on this. Preseason rankings are actually pretty good indicators of what is to come. They're not perfect. There's always going to be a team here or there that doesn't live up to expectations and a few surprises, but they are actually pretty good indicators of what's to come. Even ones that are done so far in advance of the season, like in June, 5 months before the season starts. And I went back and looked at it, and the June version of the CBS Sports Top 25 and 1 that was published 5 months before the season even started, of these Sweet 16 teams, I had 13 of them in the top 21.
Right.
13.
Wow.
In the top 21. The 1 seeds, Duke, Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky,
uh-huh.
all in the top 8.
Right.
The only schools that are in the Sweet 16 that I didn't have in the preseason top 25 and 1, or even in the top 21 of the preseason top 25 and 1, are Purdue, Texas Tech, and Houston. And those are 3 teams that all vastly overachieved
sure.
this year to get into the – to become what they've become. Mm-hmm. It's why, by the way, those 3 guys are the 3 leading candidates for National Coach of the Year. Yeah.
Chris Beard, Matt Painter, and Kelvin Sampson. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they have done something that they weren't expected to do with the rosters in place. That's why they weren't ranked in the preseason. But 13 of the other 16, I had in the top 25 and one. In the top 21 of it, 5 months before the season even started. And so I know that this has been March mundane as opposed to March madness for some. But I, for one, find it interesting that finally in this event that is typically wacky, it really is playing out like most other postseasons and most other sports do, with the better teams advancing and the teams that spent months showing themselves as the best in the country actually being the ones that are standing last. The top 14 teams in the most recent AP poll, all still alive in this NCAA tournament. The top 11 teams at KenPom, all still alive in this NCAA tournament. And every serious national championship contender, still alive in this NCAA tournament. So it's just like I told you yesterday. I know that the round of 64 and round of 32 might have been boring for some of you, but the great thing about a boring opening weekend of the NCAA tournament, if by boring you mean the teams that were supposed to win won, is that it sets up incredible matchups for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And it almost doesn't matter who wins on Thursday, Friday. You're going to have incredible Elite Eight matchups on Saturday, Sunday. And we do right now have a chance to have something that's never happened before happen, and that's have four regional finals with one seeds against two seeds playing across the board for a trip to the Final Four. We've never actually had that in all four regions at the same time. But all the one seeds and all the two seeds are favored in their games on Thursday and Friday. And so if the teams that are supposed to win continue winning, then we will have that. My prediction, we won't get it across the board, but I do think at least two regional finals will be one seed against two seed. And so the weekend should be a lot of fun. Be back with Dinner to Go. Let's do Dinner to Go.
Dinner to Go is brought to you by Memphis Barbecue Company. It's Dinner to Go. What did we learn today?
A whole bunch of stuff, but we mostly focused on the basketball coaching changes in the SEC. There are now four jobs open after Arkansas fired Mike Anderson earlier today. The other ones are Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, and Alabama. LSU obviously probably going to open at some point. And the point I made is that those schools now have so much money, they can seriously afford to spend on a basketball coach. So, like, if they want to go out and offer Kelvin Sampson $4 million, they can do it. If they want to go out and offer Chris Beard $5 million, like, they can afford to do it. You remember Alabama tried to hire Greg Marshall a few years ago? They didn't get it done, but it was made clear at that time that it was an open check. You know, if you'll come for $5 million a year, we'll give you $5 million a year. And so I would expect these schools to make big, big hires. Probably don't have to take chances on mid-major guys at most of these places. You can go actually buy somebody else's successful coach.
What's the biggest game tonight?
You got NIT fever?
Sure.
Wichita State, Indiana.
Hey. There you go.
Playing in the NIT. It's about to tip off here in just a couple minutes. It's on ESPN. Wichita State playing well down the stretch. Memphis beat them twice this season, but they're in the NIT quarterfinals. Winner is going to New York City. Other quarterfinal tonight, Creighton and TCU. That tips on ESPN at 8 o'clock.
What should I watch on TV?
You know what is on tonight? CBS Sports Network at 8 o'clock. They're re-airing the Duke Central Florida game from Sunday. I happened to watch it late Sunday because they re-aired it then too, and I was just up working. And so fun basketball game. If you saw it live, you know that. But it actually is worth checking out again if you are super bored. So CBS Sports Network at 8 o'clock.
Is there anything I need to make sure I read?
Talked to Jeff Calkins earlier. He was at media availability for Penny Hardaway and said he's writing a Penny Hardaway column, grading him in a variety of ways on his first season at the University of Memphis. So go read that when it posts, dailymemphian.com.
What's on tap for tomorrow?
Well, it'll be Wednesday. That means Joe Mullinax talking Grizzlies with him in the first hour, Jeff Calkins in the second. We'll be one day closer to restarting the NCAA tournament. And who knows, maybe another coach will get fired. We'll talk about that.
Either way, enjoy your night. I'm going to enjoy mine. Meet me back here tomorrow at 4. Till then, be careful. Be kind. Be good. Rep your hood.
WMFS FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis. Home of the Jason and John Show. Weekdays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. 92.9 FM ESPN. A radio.com sports station.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.